Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
Have you ever thought about what your parents did right and what they did wrong in terms of giving you the skills you needed to thrive in life? And if you're a parent yourself, do you feel you have the tools to teach your kids how to flourish and be happy?
Our guest on this episode is educational psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. Michelle Borba, who you may know from her appearances on the Today Show, Dr. Phil, The View, CNN, and many other shows. And her latest book is called Thrivers, The Surprising Reasons Why Some Kids Struggle and Others Shine. Michelle, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you. This is a pleasure.
You've said that thrivers are made, not just born. Is that always the case? Because you hear stories about people who've accomplished a lot without parental encouragement and thrived on their own.
Well, they're still making it on their own, though. So what we do know is there's no gene for resilience. We know instead that it's a combination of people in their lives that have helped them become who they are and bring out their best, but also skills that they've learned and keep practicing and practicing. So when push comes to shove or the challenge comes up, they can use them in that heat of the moment, but also experiences that help them thrive. So you put all those together, it's either you do it on your own or you've got somebody to help you. Usually there's somebody out there who's at least an anchor who says, I refuse to give up on you.
Now, how do you define a thriver? Because I think maybe that looks a little bit different for a lot of us.
A thriver to me is just a kid who's facing adversity and says, I got this. They don't have to go run into mama or dad. Can you help me out? They have the internal skill compass that says, I've got this. I can do it. It's a little different to me than a resilient person, because usually that definition is kind of like a koosh ball. You push it and then it comes right back exactly the way it was before. I don't buy into that any experience doesn't slightly alter you. So you've changed a little bit. But a thriver is really a kid who's got agency or a sense of internal control and doesn't need to rely on others.
Kids were forced into a major change during the pandemic in one way or another. Why did some kids cope with the change in schooling and not seeing their friends better than others did? And you see kids who were really good learners in person who really struggled in online learning and vice versa.
Oh, great question. And I'm going back to, I interviewed 100 kids recently and they had some mind-bogglingly simple answers. Number one is many of the kids who are thriving right now had pre-existing coping skills and they can be extremely ordinary. We discovered that things like prayer or a hobby or a sense of humor or Great Aunt Sally or one kid says it's Agatha Christie books. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. You're 14. How'd you find those? She said, Mom left a whole bunch out. I said, okay. But things like that can make an ordinary that seems so ordinary that around your house can be things that help kids go to compensate. Other kids along the way said that they'd learned some more sophisticated coping skills like mindfulness, or they were doing yoga. So push came to shove, they had it right there. And even though we've all been physically distancing, many kids said they still had a comrade in arms who was either a text buddy or somebody on the other end of a FaceTime, so that they kept the communication going. And that really did help them thrive.
One of the points that you make that I think is really something we all should relate to in our own lives is that any crisis amplifies pre-existing issues. So for kids whose parents were maybe getting divorced or somehow struggling, or maybe the family was struggling financially before the pandemic, this has really maybe put them over the edge.
Exactly. That's the one thing we do know. Now, look, I started to write Thrivers when I was concerned about one stat, and that was 1 in 5 American kids was going to come up with a mental health disorder. And that was extraordinarily troubling to me. And then came the pandemic. And now we're looking at a wave that the CDC is saying probably the next big crisis along the way is not going to be the pandemic or the next virus. It's going to be a youth mental health crisis. So it means that maybe as a group of parents, we can kind of push the reset button and says, it is an uncertain world. If not a virus, who knows what the next uncertainty is going to be? Are we preparing our kids to be able to handle life without us and to be able to hit the bundles and the challenges along the way and be able to bounce back?
Why is it that so many people in my generation seem to have mental health disorders that just didn't happen when my mom was a kid, even though in this day and age, we have so much more?
Right, right. Well, you know, I think it's that people weren't talking about this. Like Michelle, right. when you and I were growing up, it wasn't the kind of in your face sort of an epidemic that it is now, the mental health struggles.
It wasn't the 1 in 5 statistic, yeah. Or maybe it was, and people just didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
Well, the stats are increasing. And we know that because what they do is they database them based on the cohort of 10 years ago versus 10 years before that, and how many kids, for instance, are going to ER visits for anxiety or depression or suicidology. We can also clearly check suicide attempts or depression and how many kids are getting any kind of help from that. But I think our culture was a little different along the way. We had a Mayberry, we had a village, and mm-hmm. we had June Cleaver, who seemed to be a lot more relaxed. We had a little more stability in terms of the village effect, or Great Aunt Sally was also there for us. And then along came the way, some things that began to take mental health away from us. I think the first thing that is different is we can say digital media has clearly changed our children. It doesn't mean that every kid's going to be suicide because of the result of it, but we do know that it does impact mental health if that's all you're going to rely on. The second thing in terms of COVID, we do know that you need relationships, and many of our kids were already, they told me, relationship hungry prior to the pandemic. They didn't know how to read each other well because they were looking down, not up, or they didn't have enough time. A sandbox had been removed from our kids' lives that was still there in our dare era way back when. Mm-hmm. So many other factors. So we always want to blame one thing. When I'm seeing it's accumulation of factors that have really changed society, and it just means that we need to be a little wiser about it and realize though you can't change society, you sure can what goes on inside your home.
Our Nobody Told Me conversation continues as we share some information about our sponsor, Green Chef. Green Chef is a CCOF certified meal kit company that makes eating well easy with plans to fit every lifestyle. Green Chef is now owned by HelloFresh, and with a wider array of meal plans to choose from, there's something for everyone.
Whether you're keto, paleo, vegan, vegetarian, gluten-free, or just looking to eat more balanced meals, Green Chef offers a range of recipes to suit your preferences, and Green Chef has expanded its menu. Now choose from more than 30 recipes weekly with the option to mix and match meals from different dietary preferences in the same box without changing your plan. For example, you can order vegan one day and keto the next.
Green Chef is now offering 10-minute lunches. Each week's menu includes 2 convenient, low-prep, and nutritious lunch recipes, ready in just 10 minutes with no cooking required. They're perfect for when you're on the go or pressed for time at the office.
Make time for exciting new goals this spring with Green Chef's wholesome, elevated recipes. Try fast and fit recipes under 750 calories and ready in less than 10 minutes. Plus, you'll cut down on meal prep with pre-portioned and prepped ingredients, including pre-measured sauces, spices, and dressings.
We are big fans of Green Chef's gluten-free menus featuring meals like cheesy Dijon pork chops with roasted carrots and green beans with almonds.
Also on the gluten-free menu this month is another one of our favorites, pistachio-crusted sockeye salmon. Of course, we have a special offer for Nobody Told Me listeners. Just go to greenchef.com/nobody60 and use code NOBODY60 to get 60% off plus free shipping.
Green Chef is the number one meal kit for eating well.
Just go to greenchef.com/nobody60 and use code NOBODY60 to get 60% off plus free shipping.
You've said that self-confidence is the most important character strength and that it's something parents can teach their kids. How?
Well, the first thing is realizing that thrivers have a strong understanding of who I am. It's not what mommy or daddy wants me to be. It's understanding of my particular strengths, and they can accept their weaknesses. As a result, they're more likely to find what we now know is a sense of purpose and meaning over their own life. That alone is fascinating because Bill Damon's studies at Stanford says that only about 20% of incoming college freshmen, Stanford, prior to the pandemic, had that sense of purpose and meaning because they were driven away from their strengths. So the first thing is real simple. I think we all need to take a moment and just kind of observe our kids a little closer. What do they gravitate towards? What brings them joy? Do they have a hobby or an interest? Because we do know that that's going to help them decompress. It doesn't mean that you're going to stop helping them if they're struggling in math, but we're going to also focus much more on their strengths, and those strengths, when the kid is aware of it, build them up. That's what creates the foundation, my confidence. Now, the rest of those character strengths are a lot easier to try to build into because they amplify each other.
And I've heard you say too that you shouldn't tell your kid, God, you're the best artist, if all they're doing is drawing stick figures, and encourage them to do something where somebody else is going to tell them the truth at some
you're
point.
Not the best artist.
You're not the best. So how can we tell them, for example, maybe to not work on art and to move on to something else, even if, let's say, they enjoy art, if they're just not good at it, and we know that they're not?
Well, first of all, if they enjoy it, even though they're not good at it, that's a hobby. So it doesn't mean it's going to be something that they excel in the rest of their lives and are going to end up with the Olympic medal or the Picasso Award of the century. That isn't what it's about. It's about finding your own joy and just immersing yourself in it. Maybe that's the moment when you see he's really spending more time or learning that easier, or he just gravitates towards it, or you can see the joy in his life. You can slowly begin to maybe focus a little more on that one, saying, wow, you seem to really enjoy that. What do you like about it? Find out where he's coming from in it. Maybe that's the kid you can put a little more time and effort and a little more money in terms of the art supplies for him. You can also just point it out. Seems like you really enjoy it. Boy, you're getting better at that. Yesterday you were here, today you're here. Wow, that effort is really paying in. You'll develop a growth mindset along the way.
Now, I know we've talked about how self-confidence is one of the character strengths that you feel sets thrivers apart. Tell us about the other character strengths that you think parents should really be working on with their kids.
There are seven altogether. Now, your first question is, where'd you come up with these seven? There's some phenomenal research. I got you guys. Some phenomenal research that has been going on that isn't in any of our parenting books. That's actually looking at cohorts of children, large numbers of samples of kids who have been growing up in very adverse situations, from war zones to poverty to homelessness to abuse. And despite it, they've discovered, and we're talking about following the same kids for 40 years, that they begin to do quite well despite it all. And then the next question is why? What I was fascinated is the why. Was there any commonality in all these studies on resilience? And my desk became a post-it note just covered with it, of looking at commonalities of this study, this study, this study. What I was looking for were teachable strengths. Teachable, it had to be. They weren't going to be locked into DNA. They had to be something that you could teach, and you could teach from, you know, sandbox to prom and on. So I ended up with seven. And they seem to be the ones that were most highly correlated to resilience, as well as buffing mental health, as well as helping your kid become a peak performer in a classroom. We talk self-confidence. The second one is empathy, or social competence, that just keeps coming up over and over again. That it doesn't mean your kid has 50,000 friends, but they can relate well with others, or at least get another kid to become their buddy. They have this comradeship, and as a result, mental health needs are far more stable with that child. Third one is self-control, which I think every parent across the country and the world would say our kids need. That's the one that helps your kid put the brakes on impulses so they can think straight, they can regulate, they can focus longer. That's going to help them thrive because they're going to need that no matter what. The fourth one is integrity. They have a strong value or belief system that's planted in them, hopefully, but the parents' value system. So when push comes to shove and a mental adversity comes or peer pressure comes along the way, this kid doesn't wither or waver. He goes, I'm going this way because this is who I am. And it gives him a stronger internal compass as well. Curiosity. I love that one because what we now know is thrivers kind of think outside the box. So when they're faced with a problem, they don't go, oh, can't do anything about it. They find a way around it or through it. They're great little problem solvers so they can keep on going. Perseverance is number six. Now I'm going to not stop. I've got those other traits to help me. And the more I keep working on this, the more effort I put in, the more likely I'm going to succeed. And then the final one is hope. optimism. Despite all the doom and the gloom, I can still find a little bit of a silver lining. Not necessarily a Pollyanna, but a kid who can at least keep the pessimism down so he can keep hope alive and those other traits alive as well. And they're all teachable. That's the great thing.
So then what do you do if you're a parent who's listening to this right now and you've got a teenager who is struggling with a mental health issue or self-confidence, or you're thinking to yourself, that kid is on social media too much. They are so concerned with their own appearance. They're lacking empathy. Is it ever too late for that parent to start to teach them these traits?
Oh, I love that question. It is never too late. If it was, the entire counseling industry would go out of business. We would be doomed as well. It's not too late for us. So there's some good news.
Right.
You can still become a more resilient human being. Let's say what the kids say. If you really have a kid who's struggling, I always ask the kids, what's the best thing you can say to a kid? And most of them say, sometimes parents don't have the right things that they can say, but if they're just calm with us and stay with us and let us at least know that they're concerned or I'm there for you, that alone can make a difference. Anytime you think your child is too different from his normal, it's lasting too long, it's spilling over into too many areas, your own red flags are up and you're too concerned, that's when you do get some help, because all of the skills that I'm talking about, you've got to get something beyond it with a trained mental health professional to help you out. In the meantime, stay cool and calm yourself, because there's fun things you could be doing right now, particularly with teens. Let them lead the way. One of the best stress reducers is asking kids, who are you concerned about? What would you like to do? A group of kids from Chicago were so worried about their own friends' mental health that they decided to create quarantine gift bags. I looked at them and said, what does that mean? It says, well, mom went down to the dollar store and bought some sandwich bags. And then we took turns, because we're all social distancing, decorating them. One kid baked cookies and another kid made a handwritten note. And then every day we did a driveway drop-off at one kid's driveway. I said, how'd it go? Said, you won't believe the difference. Every day, a different kid called up sobbing, saying, thank you. I didn't know anybody cared. Then every day we'd cry because we knew we made a difference. And every day we'd have to do it all over again. It was the best thing you could possibly imagine. So it was giving, not getting, but it was directed by kids.
And wow.
That's the buy-in. Yeah. Cool things that kids are doing.
You know, I'm wondering if you're a parent who feels your child has really been thriving in the in-home learning situation, and it's taken some of the stress of having peer pressure in a in-classroom situation off. Should parents consider maybe keeping their kids home and doing homeschooling in the future, even after all the schools are reopened?
It all depends. I used to be a naysayer on that, but I have met so many parents who do such an incredible job of homeschooling. And I will admit, I would have been terrible at it. But they seem to thrive as a parent themselves, and the kid thrives. So it's always a matter of, look, good parenting is what's best for my kid. And figuring out the other thing is, how are you going to substitute the friends that aren't in the home, the classmates that aren't there, what other outlets does he have? And if you can figure that one out and your kid is thriving, go for it. Many kids say they're actually doing better at home because they were bullied or felt marginalized at school. So there's some cases, it's a whole different scenario of looking at what's best for each child. And that's how you help them thrive anyway.
What kind of an impact does the parent's outlook on life and on the pandemic specifically have on the child?
Absolutely huge. We should all shudder because we sometimes fail to realize what a big difference we make. Why? First of all, one of the most amazing things was interviewing a lot of people during when I was writing Thrivers, and an 85-year-old journalist called me asking me about resilience. And when I found out that she was raised in London during World War II, I said, no, well, we're flipping this. I'm interviewing you. How did you possibly exist during World War II when every night you heard the blitz, the air raid sirens going, the planes, the bombings? How did you handle that? And she was stumped. She says, I don't know. I said, well, come on, you just endured an entire World War II with a city that was decimated every day. She said, but I don't remember any of that. I remember the air raid sirens. And then I remember we closing the drapes for the blackout. And then I remember all of my grandmother and dad and mom, we'd all start dancing and singing. I remember us singing Ring Around the Rosie. And I went, oh my gosh, that's exactly what research says on kids who endured World War II best. Parents were calm, thus the kid was calm. It mirrors down to the child. So the first step is, whatever we're doing is mirroring to our kids, and our kids do catch us. We've got to, if we want our kids to regulate, we've got to keep ourselves regulated. Another thing is that our pessimism, our words are highly caught, particularly when we've spent a whole year hunkered down with the kids and we may have been watching some doom and gloom on the TV. How are you commenting on those reports? Our children say they are catching them, but many parents are aware of that, so they're flipping it. One of the coolest things I've seen many parents do, in fact, it's in Thrivers, is start looking at the good stuff that's happening in the world, cut them out, stories. They're about an inch big and they're on the back page of the newspapers, but you can blow it up by finding the real story someplace on Google. Then paste them on index cards. And right before your little one goes to sleep, read about the story. Or when your big ones are around the dinner hour, it's a great conversation to have about, did you hear those kids? The two siblings, for instance, in Ohio, always true stories, who are so worried about the 78-year-old woman who's all by herself, our neighbor. She's just all lonely, Mom. We got to do something. Can we bring our cellos down and do a concert on her porch? We'll social distance. Well, her mom said, sure. So they dressed up, brought their cellos down. The neighbor cried while the kids cried because it was just so wonderful. And they did a cello concert and then Mom videoed it, put it on Facebook. It went viral. And kids all over the world started saying, I can do that. I play a ukulele. So they got ukulele concerts in Sacramento. They got tuba concerts going in Albania. They've got flute concerts. Children can be inspired by stories. They can also do the doom and gloom, and it lowers their empathy and increases their stress. But if we're more selective, I mean, this is the time to read Charlotte's Web. This is the time to watch Inside Out, Bambi, go through all of Harry Potter, read it with your kids. And what you'll discover is that literary fiction actually increases empathy, helps kids step into the shoes of someone. If it's a story about grief, or maybe grandma has just passed away and you found a glorious book that is about a grandmother who always also passed away, you now have bibliotherapy of the child feeling with the other character and go, she got through it, so can I. Mm-hmm. Extraordinary, ordinary little things like that can, again, make an extraordinary difference in your children's lives.
Do you worry about what will happen as we return to a more normal life with parents commuting again and not having the one-on-one time they've had with their kids during the pandemic?
I worry about mental health. I'm to the point where I'm losing sleep as a result of it, because all I do all day long is scan the results on it. Now, some children are going to do quite well, thank you. We do know that the kids who do well have usually three things going for them. It's that person who is that caring anchor who refuses to give up. The proximity of the event. For instance, we do know that many of our children during 9/11 who were right there, obviously, they didn't fare as well as kids who were across the country. But maybe some children have had a family loved one pass away that was right there with them, or they watched dad and the house or mom's business go. So the proximity to a crisis can also make or break a difference in a child, but also the protective buffers. All of these things we're talking about, problem-solving abilities. Does he have some kind of a hobby? Does he have a coping strategy? Does he have the empathy or social abilities to reach out? There's dozens of them in Thrivers, really, literally, a lot of different kinds of skills we can teach kids. Don't teach them all or your kid will never let you read another book again, but find a few that work for your family and then keep working on them together. And it'll make a difference. And I think there will be, yes, many of our children are going to do well. But those who had pre-existing issues, I think we really have to watch out for, be a little more close with them, because we've already seen children just 2 months ago compared to last month at the same time, a stark rise of 5 to 11-year-olds now going to ER visits for depression and stress. We're seeing a 31% increase in 12 to 17-year-olds going to ER visits 2 months ago versus last year for depression and suicidology.
What can parents do, though, to make sure it doesn't get to the point of needing an ER visit for their kid?
We do know that there's a few things that help minimize stress. The first thing is any kind of a routine and a ritual. Uncertainty builds it. That's why we're all in a burnout level. Who knows what's coming down the pike? But we can create rituals and routines that are same time each day. We do this, 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 this. That actually helps minimize the stress. Bedtimes. We're now looking at kids who actually haven't slept as well during COVID, says the CDC. So now let's start getting them back on a regular schedule. The more that routine schedule is, particularly teens, it's going to help them later on. Start weaning them away from digital devices. Again, the Time Magazine reports came out 3 months ago saying, watch out, we knew what was going to happen is happening. They are addicted to it. And you're not going to be able to pull that out of a child's hand because that's been their lifeline for the entire year. But slowly start weaning back, making some rules that you may play it if you're with someone. Recognizing what their fears are. What are they? Each child has a different concern. Your job is to kind of get into their shoes and go, what are you worried about? You can't talk the kid out of the fear. It's real. But what you can do is chunk it. So for instance, if your child is scared to death of the deep end of the pool, you wouldn't throw him in. Instead, what you do is tell him, put his toe in. Then the next day, put his knee in. Now you do the same thing with a child who's scared to death of the virus, and many kids are. So you chunk it, say, thank you for telling me. Now let's open the window today. Looks like you're okay. Let's open the door the next day. Let's put your toe out. Let's walk to the mailbox. You're chunking the fear each day until the child finally develops the control or the agency so he feels he can do it all on his own. And I think what we also need to realize is that each one of our kids, including us, needs to identify what our stress signs are right before we become irritable. What are the body warnings that tell us you're starting to get a little unmanageable? And it could be your hands are in a fist, or you feel your deep breathing going up and down, or you're starting to grind your teeth again. You notice you do that right before you get really into upset. Point those out so that every family member knows it. And then what are you going to replace it with? The fastest thing I ever learned was I worked on a lot of Army bases, and Navy SEALs told me, teach kids their stress signs, then tell them immediately when they feel it, chill out or calm down. Some kind of a statement to remind them what they're supposed to do. Chill out, calm down, or I got this. Then you teach them a 1-2 breath. Take a slow, deep breath from way deep in your abdomen, like you're riding up an elevator. Then you hold it. And you slowly let it out like you're blowing out a candle. But the exhale is twice as long as the inhale. If you keep doing that over and over again, practice, practice, practice any of these skills. They need a lot of practice until the teen can do it without you. Your child can do it without you. What happens is your child will now have a lifelong skill he can use anywhere and anytime. That's exactly what teens say that they're craving.
And Michelle, how important are things like hugging your kids and telling them, I love you?
That's the number one. It's absolutely incredible how many kids said, please tell me that you just love me for not my grade. Just love me for who I am. The children's comments to me, over 100 of them, said those are the things that mattered most, was calm presence, a back rub. One kid said, you know what? I know my dad never said the right thing, and he was always irritable and didn't know. But you know what he did? Every single day, he put a post-it on my bed every single day. And he just kept doing it and doing it and doing it. And I saved them all. He never realized how important they were until one day he was trying to find his belt, came into my room, and I wasn't there. And I have to walk in, and he found the cigar box with all the post-its underneath. And we both cried together and hugged. I'm so glad he did that, said that kid. Mm.
And Michelle, as you know, our show is called Nobody Told Me. So at the end of each show, we ask our guests, what is your Nobody Told Me lesson? And obviously you've done so much research on this topic on kids and how they become thrivers. But I'm curious to know what nobody told you about what makes a thriver that you wish you had known when you were a kid.
That resilience is teachable. I really was one of those that bought into the fact that I thought it was just locked into DNA, that certain kids just had an automatic, he's going to do better because it was just a product of somehow all of that DNA and those genes got a little bit more on the resilience quality. Now I realize, wrong, Michelle, this stuff is teachable and it has never been more important than now. We have got to help our kids thrive. And the best thing is we can.
And Michelle, how can people connect with you on social media and the internet? You have some great information out there.
Oh, thank you. Well, my website's michelleborba.com. I'm a 1L Michelle and my last name Borba rhymes with Zorba. So that should be pretty easy. Michelleborba.com. I'm also on Twitter at Michelle Borba. Instagram is Dr. Michelle Borba. There's just so many ideas. And the other thing is I would just really encourage parents to get on board together. Don't make it so lonely. It's been really hard. But if you find one other like-minded parent or a grandparent to support you, it'll be so much easier along the way. Nothing I'm saying is hard. It's actually easy and it's not time-consuming. It's just repetitive. And that's how you really help teach the skills of thriving. Just keep doing till your kid gets it.
Yeah, over and over, huh?
Yeah, over and over and over until they no longer need it. And they're leading you. Now you add the next one.
Fantastic advice, Michelle. Thank you again so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Our thanks to Dr. Michelle Borba, who's written many great books on kids and parenting and child development. Her newest book is called Thrivers, The Surprising Reasons Why Some Kids Struggle and Others Shine. And again, her website is michelleborba.com, and that's Michelle with one L. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You're listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you so much for joining us.